Christoph Praxler is also a developer of very important software. Speech Finder is one of them, but I think we will talk about this maybe, so I will not go into detail as to that. He's also a member, well, not personally, but the Institute is a member of the Clarin group, which has just been mentioned also by Gerhard Payer. I just want to tell you what Clarin is. Clarin is a European joint project, very big one. Germany is involved as well as about six or seven other countries. Clarin stands for Common Language Resources and Infrastructures, if I'm right.
Yeah.
And this has been developed since 2006 or 7, when people in very many European countries had the idea not to invent the wheel in every single country again and again, but to put infrastructures concerning linguistic resources together and building up an infrastructure for the maintenance and for accessibility of linguistic data. So this is just to give you an idea about Clarin. But now I give the word to Christoph Praxler, and we'll be listening with great pleasure.
Thank you very much for the introduction. It will be quite a different talk from what you heard before. I hope so, of course, since we're talking about speech. A few words or a few terms that have been mentioned in the previous talk but were not explored much further, I will explain them now. I will talk a lot about workflow, of organizing your work. You might find this talk a bit strange from a phonetician, but I'm not a phonetician, so I'm a computer scientist. I look at the at how phoneticians organize their work, and I try to develop software that helps them. One particular challenge is that phoneticians' work, as you might well know from the courses that Zachariah has been giving, are very time-consuming. So if you start to do segmentation, this takes an awful lot of time. And we have hours of audio and video recordings, but to annotate them will take years to come. I noticed this from personal experience. We have recordings of 1,000 speakers in Germany, and it took about 4 years to transcribe this stuff with doing this manually. So we had to think about more efficient ways of doing it. Also, we have to think about ways of separate or distributing the work to different people. Not for every task do we need trained phoneticians. A lot of the work can be done by people who are still learning, or even naive people. They can write down what was said in a sentence, but the fine phonetic segmentation they cannot do. For this we need phoneticians, or, as we can see, perhaps some automatic tool. So what I will talk about today is how can we have a different look at our work, maybe introduce some ideas about distributing this work to other people, or even automating part of the work. All this can only be done if there are sufficient base resources for a language. And that's how we came into contact with Zachariah. He told us that Georgian would be very interesting. We looked at it. Some colleagues of mine were also, from the start, very interested in Georgian because of the specific phonetic properties of the language. So we came naturally together, and now we want to develop some speech technology that works for Georgian, and perhaps today will be an introduction to this, and then we can see how this works. So what will I talk about? I will give you an introduction into the term speech database. I will present myself a little bit. I will talk about technology and two specific approaches to using technology in the field of speech processing. Then I will describe a service that might be of particular interest to you. And I hope to be able to do this with a demo. That's why I got recordings from Nadia, it was. She spoke a few words. She also pointed out the errors in my Georgian, or in the Georgian that Google Translate produced. So, and yet another reason to be very critical in what you get presented in terms of material. You have to look at it, and we cannot simply trust some machine. We always have to look at what they do. So thank you for the corrections here. And then I will go through a list of tools and present a conclusion. So my name, as you might have read by now, is Christoph Draxler. Early in the days when there still were dinosaurs, I studied French literature and linguistics and computer science, so quite a long time ago. I couldn't decide which to do, so I did both. And now, well, it has been quite handy since then. I did my PhD in logic programming and databases, so at that time I clearly was on the computer science side. And I did this in Zurich, in Switzerland. Then, in 1991, a professor from computer linguistics in Munich visited Zurich, and he invited me to come to Munich, and he recommended me to the phonetics lab, and that's where I have been since. And my work there has been mainly concerned with speech database collections, so we started to look at how can we, as computer scientists, take care of audio data, speech data. At that time, for phoneticians, a database was a case full of tapes. That's what they called a database. And for a computer guy, a database was something like SQL, where you could have everything in well-ordered structure and where you could write your queries, but you didn't know how to put audio into SQL. So from that time on, we collaborated and tried to get these two worlds together. And I have always been busy in the area of software development. I looked at the way phoneticians do their work and try to help and try to develop some software to make this life easier. Recently, and I suggest that this is also something you try and do at your university, is have a look whether there is this field media informatics. It's quite a new direction of computer science. They look a lot at how humans interact with machines, and they have very nice ideas. First of all, they know how interfaces work. They know how important they are, and they can give you the expertise, and they are trained in understanding your field. So media informatics always looks for applications where they can apply their knowledge. They are busy in the interface design in cars. They design interfaces to, or new graphical user interfaces, and so on. So I came into contact with media informatics in Munich, and we have found quite a number of areas where we can collaborate. For example, we didn't think of this before, but annotation, as I said, is a very time-consuming task, and people don't like to do it. So why not put it in a game? People don't even notice that they're transcribing for us. They play the game, but in the end, we get a phonetic transcription. Wow, super. It didn't work quite the way we did, but it was an experiment. And we had some other types of this collaboration. And I think if you want to get some new ideas on how things can be done on the computer, have a look at people doing media informatics. They're really interesting. Okay. So now we'll start on a journey. I think you remember the event, and you can see that you cannot do this alone. You have to be more than one person to do this, and that's what I want to share with you today. I want to show you that we need both the humanists, we need the computer scientists, and we need perhaps a few other people. I think the slides will be on the web somewhere, so you don't have to take a picture of this picture, or you can have the picture from me. Okay, so we collaborate on this, and to get something flying. Okay, let's go. A speech database, in my terms, consists of at least three levels of data. We have the primary data, where you have the original audio, the original video, and as phoneticians, we also put instruments in other people's mouths and body, or put them into machines, so we also have sensor data. We attach little coils to the tongue so that we can see how the tongue moves, or we put ultrasound here to see how the tongue moves, things like that. So we not only have audio data, we have other data as well. Then you have data, secondary data. You listen to the audio, and you always do an orthographic transcript. That's something at the moment you need this absolutely to find parts of the text. So if you want to know where a given word was spoken, you have to look in the text, then you have to find the time marker, and then you can go to the signal. We also have derived signals. So if we do a phonetic analysis, we have the audio data, and then we also look at, for example, the form and frequencies, so we can distinguish the different vowels by formants. We look at the F0, so the base frequency of the voice. Male people, males normally have a low frequency, females a higher F0, and children a very high frequency F0. Yes, and we also produce annotations. So we not only look at the basic transcript, but we look at fine phonetic details. We want to know where the accents are and so on. So this is higher level annotations. That's not all. We also need some more. Whenever we go to the field, we have recorded specific speakers for a particular purpose. So they speak a particular dialect, or we have the requirement that we have to record in every town within 50 kilometers environment or something like that. We know something about the recording, about the speaker, and so on. So that's what we put into the metadata. That's data about the data that we have recorded. We also have log data, so data automatically produced by our recording environment. It tells us this recording was made at 9:27 on the 29th of October or something like that. All this that is recorded automatically. We also include this in the database. We have reports. So very often we describe everything went well and we did this and we did this and first we went here. So a free text that tells us something about the recordings that were performed. We also have contracts. We always have to ask our speakers, may we use the recordings? May we distribute them on the web? May we use them for scientific purposes? And we need their signature on this. So these are typically the levels of data that we will have when we do speech recordings, either in the field or in the studio, and which become part of the speech database. This has always been the case. People have always done it this way. But what is new with the computer, new with digital processing, is that the database has a structure that becomes clear and that you can also have a look at and query. So you know exactly which levels of data are available, what they are called, how they relate to each other, and all this is now explicitly visible. So you can say, for this word, I want all the phonemes matching it, and for all these phonemes, I want the allophones, and I know that in what numerical relation they stand to each other. This visible structure also allows us to do browsing in the database, so we can have a look and kind of explore the database, or we can start some explicit search. So give me all the phonemes in the initial position of the numbers in Georgian, for example. This would mean search on different levels, language Georgian, words, number words, and the phonemes. And on all these levels, they are connected to each other by this visible structure, and this helps you in searching the data. And finally, you want to extract the data, meaning that you want to use it in some other tool to process it, to do statistical analysis, to do visualization, or things like that. And finally, what has always been the attempt, but is very seldomly achieved, is long-term availability. We have a lot of recordings done, and then the researcher loses his funding, PhD is done, what have you, and then what happens to the data? Maybe a lifelong of exploration or research has gone into a particular speech database, then the researcher retires, and if there's nobody to take up his work, basically, and very often this data is lost because nobody takes care of it anymore. So this is also where Clarine comes in. We try to find this type of data. Where have people collected data and data that is no longer maintained? And if we find this data, we try to make it available again by collecting everything that is still available, bringing it into a defined structure, and then offering it in a Clarine repository. At Munich, we now have the policy that all our students have to make their data available in the specific Clarin formats, so that even for bachelor thesis, master thesis, and so on, they will each produce a speech database according to the official standards of Clarin, simply, first of all, to have the data, and of course, to encourage them, to show them that it's not much more work than doing it in a different way, but it has the additional benefit that the data will be available even if they go to industry and earn some real money, or if they stay at university and continue their research, it will always be possible to work with this data. And perhaps from my personal experience, an example of this, I wrote my magister thesis on computer-based drama analysis 28 years ago. And this year, people started asking for it. So this year at the Digital Humanities Conference, I was asked by some researchers, do you know about this topic? And I said, yes, I wrote my thesis 28 years ago. And they said, oh, that's interesting, because there's an international workshop now. So what I had to do is find my paper copy, scan it, and then give it to these people. And if I had Clarin, it would still be available. So even if your perspective are the next 1, 2, 3 years, think of long-term availability of your data, of what you are producing. And I guess that's what the pharaohs had in mind when they built their pyramids. They didn't build them for the next 1, 2, 3 years, but they wanted them to stay. So perhaps you should go with this attitude to your work, think of it as important, bring it into a structure that hopefully will survive the next years, and then data will be available. Okay. So what are our minimum requirements for a speech database? Of course, we need the speech signal. And we always try for optimal quality under the given circumstances. It's clear that if you go to a village and do recordings, you will not have a soundproof environment. Or if you do recordings in a car, you will also have the car noise. Or if you go to a market, then there will be always surrounding noise. But there are quite easy technical tricks that can help you to improve the signal. I've got this little microphone here now because it moves with me and it doesn't interfere with my speech. So if you could use this type of equipment with your people, audio quality will be much better, and all the technical stuff that's available for audio signals you can use on your data, on the signal data as well. We always need a basic transcript. So this transcript has to be orthographic in your language. It has to be chunk aligned, so you have to know that a given sentence starts here and ends here. You don't have to do this for every word, but a coarse grain definition of times where the data is really helps. If you have a 2-hour recording and are looking for a particular word, that takes you hours if you have to do this in the signal, but if you have at least a sentence by sentence or paragraph by paragraph chunk alignment, it will make life much easier. And your transcript should be theory neutral. This is the part where we always discuss with linguists. They want to put everything into the basic transcript at once. They want to put the syntactic analysis there and everything they can, because while they're doing the transcription, they say we can do everything now. But perhaps you should think about it. Do the basic transcript really fast. It shouldn't take much more than 10 times the original recording, and then you can add everything later on. That's our approach. You always need a lexicon. It should take the standard pronunciation of all the words occurring in the transcripts. The formats for all our text documents should be UTF-8 or some other Unicode format. Specify somewhere which format you have used, because otherwise life will be difficult later on. If you do phonetic stuff, you can take the Sampa alphabet, which makes it easy to type phonetic symbols on the keyboard, or use the original IPA, which is nicer. And then we need metadata, so we need basic descriptions of the recordings, of the recording sessions, of the speakers, and so on. And there are a number of standards proposed for metadata. CMDI is the one that we propose. It's Component Metadata Initiative. That's the format. It's an XML-based format. It's supposed to be human and machine readable, but I think machines can read it better than humans. But still, you can, as a human, read it. This is simply a representation for the chunk alignment. So you have a long story. This is a red story. It takes about 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And marks, there are two different speakers in the story. So there's Ben and the person speaking about himself as I. And we try to identify the parts which each speaker speaks. So I simply put one level of transcript, that's the lower one, and then I make this rough chunk alignment. Speaker one says this, speaker one says this, but I don't go into details here. This can be done very quickly, and it will help you later on in identifying the relevant parts of the signals that you want to work on. Okay, now let's have a look at workflow. You will see quite a number of graphs now, and they will show in a very abstract way the way that, or the task that we have to do. This is without any time information. It simply shows us one step after the other that we have to go through to make our final speech database. We specify the stuff that we want to record. So whenever you go to the field, you have an idea of what you want to record in the field. Perhaps you have a list of materials, sentences, or phrases, or so on. What I presented to you were numbers and month names and day names in Georgian. So I knew what I wanted to record. Then I do the actual recording with a speaker or with many speakers. I do some basic signal processing, which means I take the data, perhaps resample it, but I do not change it. So everything that I do after the recording to the signal is simply reformatting it or reconverting it, but I never change anything with it. I might also do some signal processing, like computing the fundamental frequency, F0, and the formants, and so on. Then, after that, after I've done this with my recordings, I start the annotation or the transcript. Sometimes, based on the transcript, I get an idea of having a closer look at some specific parts of the signal, of doing some more signal analysis on this part of the signal, so there is a loop here. Perhaps if I'm only interested in specific words, I make a basic transcript, then later on look up where these words are, I extract them from the signal, and then I start my phonetic analysis in more detail. Finally, when I've done with my work, when basically I've answered my research question, I start the final processing. I put everything together, I pack everything together in one bundle, and then exploration means I give it to the scientific community or use it myself for doing the final scientific analysis. So the research question I'll answer at the end. This is the final processing, is simply packing your material together to make it accessible for research. The same graph now extended with a bit of additional information. First, I do my specification in text. I write down what I want. When I do the recordings, I get audio signals, I get video signals, I get sensor signals. When I do the signal processing and annotation, I get either some more signal data, derived signal data, stuff that I can compute from the original signal, or I get an annotation in text, normally in XML or some other machine-readable format. And after the processing, I get XML files, I get PDF documents, I get cascading style sheets for presentations on the web, or some scripts that tell me that show me what has been done with the data. So this is simply, as I said, a sequence of tasks that you have to go through without any time information here. This will come later on. Okay, and this is the slide where my students normally throw up their hands and say, wow, we only have 6 semesters and we have to learn all of this? Yes. These are the tools that are available. But look at it from another perspective. It might be even fun learning them. You might not need all of them. but you should know that they exist, and you should make a wise decision on which tool to use. So if you look at doing some recordings, you can do this with a tool like Audacity, but Audacity was made for musicians. It has a completely different idea of doing recordings. You press recording, and then it goes on for hours until you press the stop button, which is okay for musicians because they do this in their sessions or in their concert. But we, as speech scientists, we want to have short recordings tailored to a specific session or a specific situation. So perhaps we should use something like Speech Recorder, which we developed, which cuts the recordings into small segments, which are much easier to work with. The recordings we just now did were with Speech Recorder. Then you need to do some basic signal processing. For this, there are a number of tools available as well. And as you can see, most of the tools are available for annotation. Why is this? Yes, because everybody has different requirements for the annotations. Linguists do different annotations than phoneticians and so on. So that's why there are so many tools. They all serve a different purpose. And it is good if you at least had a look at them and then knew why you chose one of them, one of these tools. The standard tool, I don't know, is anybody familiar with Praat? Two hands, yes, four hands. Zachariah has two hands, okay. Perhaps they were not as attentive in your course as you thought. Yes, okay, we'll have a look at Praat later on so that you can catch up, but that's the standard tool phoneticians use. If you have a look at Praat from a computer scientist perspective, you will see that it was written about 15 years ago. Ugly, difficult to expand, but it's the standard tool. Everybody's using it because until now there's nobody who has devised a better system. Without telling you a secret, we're working on a better system, but it's not yet finished. Okay, and then you need further tools. But the basic idea is there are millions of tools out there. Be flexible, try the one or the other tool until you find the one that suits your needs. And if the project changes, if requirements change, do this again, because using the right tool will make your life much easier. And don't be afraid that there are so many. As I said, sometimes it's fun exploring the different tools. Now, finally, the final graphic slide. Time comes into play. How do we organize these tasks in terms of time? And who can we give the work to? So, in the lower horizontal box, internal, that's the work that we can do. The upper box is work that somebody else must do. So the specification, normally you do together with somebody else. If you have an industrial contract, they tell you what to do, and you write a specification, they check it, and then you agree on the final set of requirements. If you apply for a scientific grant, you have to say what you want to do, and they have a look at it, and then they tell you, yes, this makes sense or not. So it's a good idea to exchange with other people about your research goals. Then you sit down and prepare all the materials, and then you can start with the collection. Do your speech recordings, do your, yeah. After you've done the first few recordings, you can start with the post-processing, meaning packing everything up, doing the basic transcript, and so on, and you can add further levels of annotation. For this, of course, you need some basic recordings to be there already. Then it's a good idea to ask somebody to have a look at what you have been doing until now, to check, is everything okay? Is the material complete? And it's quite important to do this. People like to forget this phase. We, in an industrial contract, we forgot about a certain word which was in the specification. We would not have noticed this, but they told us then, look, you promised to record this word as well, which was an important date word. And then we saw our error, we added it to the material. There's a huge German data collection, Deutsch Heute, performed over more than a few years in Germany in 160 cities with four speakers each. but it doesn't have the word zero. They have 1, 200, but no zero. We don't know how zero is spoken in Germany now. If we rely on this material, if we do corpus analysis, people would not think about that there's a zero in Germany. Okay, so have somebody else check your material early while it's still time to change, to correct. Okay, when you're done with the phases, normally the collection is over, all the processing goes on for a while, annotation also goes on. If you're done with this, document what you have done and then give the whole thing to somebody else to check for completeness, formal consistency, and so on. This you especially have to do if you want to exchange your data with somebody else or if you want to charge some money for it and so on. It's like the final report when you apply for a grant or with an industry contract, they have to give you the final payment saying everything is okay. And in the end, you can start to distribute your work in some way. And although the boxes for collection, post-processing, and annotation have the same size here, this is not true in reality. So if we have collection, post-processing, and then we have annotation, it takes a bit more time. And that's where we come in, and we try to find more efficient solutions. How am I doing? Okay. If you look at this picture, then you can start thinking about reorganizing your work. So look at what expertise, what knowledge is needed for every single task. Do we need phonetic experts to do the recordings? Well, maybe not. We've had very good experience with people recording themselves or recording them via the internet. I don't have to have an expensive recording in the mountains in Germany to do recordings, although it's nice for the expert to go there, but people can do this themselves, and they are much more comfortable if that not somebody else is sitting at the table. Of course, if you have highly critical material and if you're looking for very specific phenomena, then you have to make sure that the speaker is producing these phenomena, but sometimes the interviewer is of no help, but is a hindrance in the recording. So if you can omit it and have everything done by the speaker himself or herself, it might even be better, more neutral. You have the same conditions for everyone. So look at every task in detail and say, do I need an expert here? Can somebody else do it? Can the machine do it? And make a tick at every task and see, yeah, who can do this? You have to look, how many people do I have available? At the Phonetics Institute, it's quite easy for me to get a number of motivated phoneticians to do the work. But if I had a company, or if I were a linguist and had no phonetic knowledge, I know that getting the phonetic transcription will be very expensive because I have to go to some other place, hire people to do this, or ask for a favor, and this will be expensive when they ask the return favor. So look at the work in this way. Look at it from a new perspective. Always think about improving it. Think about modifying it or adapting to the current situation. And then you have to, of course, check equipment and infrastructure. If in this remote village in the German mountains I do not have internet, it doesn't make sense to try internet recordings. If you have, then you can do it. So always make the stuff, the equipment, meet the requirements or the given circumstances. Exploit parallelization. For this German Deutsch Heute project, this was one person traveling around Germany for 4 years doing the recordings. He was hardly ever in the office. He was only in the office to upload the data to the machine, buy a train ticket, and go to the next place. And he was a trained phonetician. And can you imagine how expensive this is, simply to do the recordings? What we tried in Munich was to do recordings via the internet. We had little boxes with microphones we could send to 10 different places at the same time by mail. And people would do their recordings there, and all the data would come together in our place without traveling. It still didn't go from today to tomorrow, but it was much quicker, and we were quite happy with the results. Of course, there are benefits to a phonetician or to a trained recording engineer going some places because he knows that everything will go well and he will find the right speakers and so on. These are things that we did not have available. But for our purposes, it was easy to parallelize the work. Even more so for annotations or basic transcripts. Basic transcripts are easy to do, write down the words, what was said, and this for this I don't need a trained phonetician. I don't even need a linguist. Anybody can do this who can read and write with a minimum standard of quality. And if I could offer this as a service via the web, many people could do this at the same time. I tried this at the Leipzig Summer School, and I got from 4 in the afternoon to 8 o'clock in the next morning, I got 100 transcripts of sentences without doing a single thing myself. I went to the ice cream parlor and did some networking, but some people worked for me, and some people even like to work at 4 at night where our office is closed. But in this case, we could use this. Centralize all your data storage. So try to automate the data transfer, have it in one place so that you can access it in one place, and invest in automation. You might not be able to read the two links. There are two links from Wikipedia, because I thought this is not my original idea. It's a process called either scientific management, or in the German Wikipedia, it's associated with the name Taylorism. And it's quite interesting, although it's basically the same topic, the contents of the two are quite different. The one says this method has been deprecated, it's old and so on, and the other one says, yeah, that's the way to go. So, oops, sorry. If you look at this work, I think that's what was applied in the world of economics to organizing your work. And I think it describes quite well that you should have a different look at how you proceed in your data collection and data preparation. Okay, I've spoken about the cost of annotation. If you look at how much it really costs, if you simply have to listen to an audio recording and saying this is okay or not okay, this takes about the same time as the recording takes. Might take a bit longer because you have to open a file and close it again, but you can speed it up. You can play the sound at 1.5, the normal speed, and it will still be okay for trained listeners. And then it's even quicker than real time. So that's something that people can do very quickly. And anyone can do this. If you simply ask them, is there noise in there, or can you understand the speech, that's a question they can answer with yes and no. And that makes it very easy to process this, and then you can sort the good material from the bad material very quickly. For basic transcript, you need a literate native speaker, so somebody who can read and write rather well, and it takes about 10 times the original recording time. So that's like a good typist, like a good secretary who can type rather quickly, and that's all you need here. You might have to tell them don't use punctuation marks, and there's a few conventions to follow, but people can do this really quickly. If you want to do phonemic transcript, so simply writing down the sounds of the spoken words without putting any boundaries, simply write the sequence of phoneme symbols, that takes about 100 times real time. So that's a long time. 1 minute of speech, 100 minutes of phonemic segmentation. And then still you don't have the timing information, you only know the phonemes that were spoken. And if you do, but linguistic students can do this very well. That's what they're trained at. And if you do a phonetic segmentation where you exactly say sound A begins here and goes to here and is followed by this one from here to here, at least 500 times real time. So now you know if we can automate some of the steps, at least maybe the second last, this would really help us. And that's where we come in. How do we do this? Well, one thing is to use crowdsourcing, means distributing the work to other people. The other one is web services automating these things. And that's what I'll be talking about now. both require online access to resources, so we need internet connections, and we need, they don't have to be really fast, but you need them. And as a matter of fact, we're only in the speech community starting to use these ideas for our speech processing. The ideas have been around, but the technology or the making these things work are not yet in place. So what I will be presenting here is work in progress. We're working on this, other people are working on this. It's not yet so that you can go all the way from the specification to the final distribution in a smooth workflow. There are still breaks in there where you have to do things manually and do some data conversion, but that's what we're aiming for, trying to make this a very smooth workflow with the different types of services and different types of ways of getting things done. So let's start with the crowdsourcing. This is the process of obtaining needed services, idea, or content. So you want something from other people by soliciting contributions from a large group of people. So if I were to give you a few audio signals and you would write down the words, this would be crowdsourcing. You're the crowd, and I would be the one giving you this work. But you wouldn't be my employees, and I wouldn't be your boss. You could decide to participate or not. I might pay you or not pay you. There are different ways of organizing this. Think about it. A lot of people do things for fun. So if you look at this idea of, if you could get people interested, if you could tell them, look, this is the language, I'm working on the language that you speak in your village, would you help me by transcribing a few sentences? Nobody would say no. They would say, wow, that's interesting, my language, my dialect. And then they would sit down and type this stuff for you, and that's what you want. You have to make them interested, get some personal interest in this, and they contribute perhaps voluntarily without paying them. Or you could give them some reward they might like, a voucher for books or an update for their mobile phone. Yes?
And the thing it was that when we start recording our voice, often we need a very long period, for example, 2 or 3 minutes, to think about one sentence. It wasn't said because we couldn't understand our own language. Mm-hmm.
This is a good point, yes. That's something you just said. I don't like hearing my voice being recorded, and most people have this feeling. But then, well, I could give to speaker A to transcriber B, and speaker B the recordings to transcriber A, and then they could exchange the data, and I would be transcribing somebody else, and this problem would not exist. Would get less dramatic, but I get your point. Some people don't want this. This is something you have to make sure that, the chemistry has to work between the recording person and the speaker, or perhaps people are less hesitant to record if it's simply a computer, or what we're working on now is to use a tablet to do the recording. People are a bit afraid of a computer on their desk. If we go to some village and show them we do recordings with the computer, they always think there's a tax officer coming. But if we show them do recordings with a mobile phone or do recordings with a tablet, then they are much less afraid and they start, So this is something you have to find out. What can we do using crowdsourcing? where we can do tasks that are difficult for computers but easy for humans. So simply such tasks are image, sound, video tagging. What is in the image? What is in the video? What is in the sound? What words do you hear? People are much better at translating than machines are. People are very good at text summarization. They can say what's important in the text. Machines, well, have their problems with this. Rephrasing, how would you say this differently? People can do this very well, machines cannot. Or speech transcription, that's something that humans can do very well and machines cannot. Actually, there is a book out there. It came out last year in March on crowdsourcing for speech processing, and it shows the different aspects of doing speech processing using crowdsourcing. Technical side, recording, transcription, and even the ethical, so the legal side of the whole thing. It's quite interesting. Okay, for crowdsourcing, you need an infrastructure. I would need a way to address you to do the work. I would need a way to give you this work and then collect the work you did and finish my work with it. A web service, the second approach that we might use to speed up our process of annotation, is some software designed to support machine-to-machine interaction over a network. That's a very abstract definition. The interface is described in a machine processable format and so on. And basically what we do is we send a message to the system and the system returns a result to us. And that's what I will be showing later on. What is the advantage of having such web services? Well, one advantage is if you have a network access, this service is available immediately. You simply send your data there and the web service is there. You can always ask Google for results, or you can always go to some website and extract the data. There's no office hours, no closing time, and so on. It's always there. And the same is true for a web service. You don't need to install any software on your local machine. Of course, you need to have a browser, but that's there already. But for example, Praat is updated every few weeks. You would have to download a new version every other week to get things done. With the web service, this is not necessary. You'd send the data to the web service and the provider is responsible for installing new software. And perhaps the provider has a bit bigger computer than you have, or at least a faster computer than you have. So you need to have a small computer with your recordings, send them there and do the expensive stuff on the server side. For the provider, for me, as somebody offering the service, I also have a few advantages with this approach. I don't have to write my software for every other operating system. I don't have to write, Praat is now exists in three versions for Linux, Windows, and Mac. And the developer always updates all three of them, which explains some of the quirkiness in Praat, because something that you can do on Mac you cannot do on Linux and so on. So he had to take the minimum that was available. If you offer your service via the web, there's one interface, one version to care about, and you know about your operating environment. It's very easy to check who is using your stuff and to log who has done what at what time, which is very interesting so that you can find out which services are really used, where do I need to improve them, and so on. If I develop a new version, all I have to do is simply turn the old one off, switch the new one on, and the service continues. I don't have to worry about everybody getting the newest version so that the data are consistent. And if I set up the service once, you can use it from wherever there is a web interface available. We, with our speech recording software via the internet, I made some recordings on the South Pole. People would never send a phonetician to the South Pole because they have nothing to do there, but there was a physicist there, and I asked her, would you like to speak into the microphone? She spoke into the microphone in Antarctica, and I got the recordings in Munich. So You can do it everywhere. What are the downsides? Well, the of course, there are also disadvantages. There's only one version available. Some people want to use the old Praat because it has some specific features, or they want to stick with Word 4 instead of Word 2007 for some specific reason. With a web service, this is not possible. If the provider updates, you have to follow, or you have to use the new version. There's no way of going back to an old system. You need network access, of course. The processing speed, if the provider's computer is not powerful enough, people will wait for a long time for work that they might have been able to do at their own machine quicker. And, quite important, you have to give your data away. You have to give it to someone, and they do something with it and return the results. And this is not always possible for legal reasons or for other reasons. You don't want to give your data away, or it's too big to give away. So these are problems with this approach. Again, the same is true. The same disadvantages apply to the provider. I think it was just recently that Windows offered an update that didn't work. So Microsoft offered an update to the Windows operating system. People downloaded it, and then they turned out that it was wrong. There was an error in there. So this is a catastrophe for this kind of service. Everybody now has a wrong version. They had a good version before, they got the new one, and this was wrong. And then you have to, they have to get yet another one. It doesn't make them very happy. There's a single point of failure. If somebody closes down the network, no more work for you to do. So there's one place where everything can go wrong, and if it goes wrong, everything will be down. So that's a problem here. And at least at the outset, it's quite difficult to estimate how many people will be using this. Of course, after some time, you will be seeing a regular pattern of usage, but you don't know. Perhaps there's an event tomorrow where somebody will mention WebMouse in the news, and we will get a million requests a day. I don't know whether we could work with this. So these are the problems that you can see as a provider. Okay, so let's have a look at some of the Clarin web service, or specifically, we will go to one particular web service. A good starting point is the Virtual Language Observatory. It lists all the available resources within the Clarin infrastructure, and it also lists the web services that are available. There are a number of linguistic tools available, so stemmers, parsers, tree bank explorers, and so on. All this is available for, not for every language, but for very many resources. For speech technology, we have text-to-speech, so you can type your text and the machine will speak it, and we can have automatic segmentation and labeling, and that's what I will focus on for the next 15 minutes. And we have a lot of visualization tools and format converters and so on. Okay, now this is where the fun might begin. WebMouse. Mouse is for Munich Automatic Segmentation. So the work that you have been doing with Praat, doing your recordings and then aligning a transcript with the recording, this process can in parts be automated. It might be a bit counterintuitive that the complicated phonetician's work can be automated, but the simple writing down the transcript cannot. You think with a lot of speech recognition available and so on, it would be easy to write down the words that were said, but this is not so. Speech recognition is ideal for getting the main concepts. So speech recognition tries to reduce all the variability that's in speech. If a speech recognizer like Siri or some other telephone-based system, if you ask for the train timetable or flight timetable or some mobile phone provider service, they're not interested in your speech. They're interested in a correct identification of your name, of the date, of the telephone number, and they throw away all the rest. So they optimize for a very small part of the signal. even a dictation system doesn't want to record your hesitations or your non-grammatical stuff. They throw this away. They want to have only clean sentences. So we have to produce, as humans, a transcript with all the problems, with all the words that you start but do not end, and so on. So this is what we need to do manually. But fortunately, this is cheap, maximum 10 times the recording time. And then we start to do the automatic segmentation, and this, which cost 500 times, can now be done in 2 or 3 times real time. So that's the magic. If you have to speak to your accounting department, to the people giving you the money, then this might be the slide to show them. The most important and most expensive part of the work can now be automated. So we have the recording. The top blue box takes some time. Chunking it into bigger units takes about the same time. If you were to do a phonemic segmentation, as I said before, 100 times. And that's the expensive work. Okay, so we try another approach. We do the orthographic annotation, takes about 10 times. We run WebMouse, takes 1 time. And then we only do a manual correction, which is about 10, 15 times. So instead of having 100 or even 500 times real time, we now have 10 to 15 times real time and get very good results. The consistency between the automatic solution and the human transcript or human transcriber's performance is about 90%. So, and humans are not perfect at this task. There is no perfect transcription. It is always with errors. If we have two transcribers transcribe the same signal, we get two different segmentations. They agree about 94% in good cases and 75 in bad. And our machine goes about 90% of what humans do. So, and if it makes errors, they're consistent. That also helps. Okay. So this is the ugly slide. You can use something like a web service from your terminal. Nobody would do this, except computer scientists and other nerds. The nice thing is, this is simply a command line interface. So you could type this into your terminal, and it would give you back a transcript. This might not sound very interesting at first, but you will see the consequences in a second, because this is what's behind the whole service. You can put this into a web interface, so whenever I upload a file and press the processing button, this command line statement will be executed. This is what I'm going to do later on. But you can also put it into other tools. I don't know whether anybody of you has done some video annotations. Has anybody worked with video so far? Okay, not too many. If you work in the Dorbis project, yes. Elan was, as a matter of fact, a result of one of the side results of the Elan, the Dorbis project. Dorbis was documentation of endangered languages. They developed this video editing software and video annotation software, and now there is a... My arms are too short for this. Up there, recognizer bus web mouse. So within the tool, within Elan, there is now a button that accesses our service, which on the one side is nice, because Elan can now do more than it can, which on the other hand is not so nice, because nobody knows that we are doing the work. Everybody credits Elan for this and not us. So we have to try and find a little logo that tells us this is now being processed by WebMouse in Munich. But until now, yeah, it becomes invisible. It's part of other tools, and that's what's interesting. And what's behind this interface is, again, the same command that you saw before. And finally, the really interesting idea is that once you have these web services, you put data into the first web service, it gets processed, and you get a new result. You can take this result and put it into another service. and yet another service. So you can have a tokenizer going to morphological analysis, going to a parser, doing some semantic representation. You can simply chain them, and you get from your original utterance or from your original sentence, you get a fully annotated system in a highly automatic way. That's the idea, the future. It has started a little bit with the Weblicht system in Clarin. The idea is here to give you one graphical interface. You do the recordings, or you have your text, do some processing steps like tokenization, lemmatization, and so on. You chain these tools and finally get a fully annotated description of a full annotation of your original text. On this screen you don't see very much. These are little boxes showing the different services available. And in the bottom layer, you choose the tools that you want to use. So perhaps you take a tokenizer from Hamburg or a format converter from Hamburg. You take a tokenizer from Stuttgart, a parser again from Stuttgart, and you simply put them into your list of tools that you want. And then you click on the start button, and the data will go through one tool, from one tool to the next, and end up in a fully annotated, full annotation of your original data. This works for a limited set of applications now in Clarin. A lot of these tools are developed at different places. All they know about each other is the exchange data interface, and then they know that this tool can talk to the other tool, can talk to the next tool, and that's what's behind this. So this is the idea that we will be exploring in the near future. This is where work has started to happen, but it's not yet done. Okay, now for the practical part. I think I still have a few minutes. We are going to go through the whole process in real. I'm a bit nervous because, as you know, in a demo, things always go wrong. We will do some speech recordings, or we have done some speech recordings with Nadia a few minutes ago. The transcription, I will make it really short because at the moment I will simply do it manually. That's what people very often have to do. Then I will send it to the WebMouse system in Munich and get back an annotation, a phonetic segmentation of the signal. I will import this into Praat and then export it again from Praat to some other tool in some format so that you can use it in Excel or for statistic analysis in R. So wish me good luck. Are there any questions until now before I start this?
So, may I have a very short question for understanding about Weblicht?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And depends where I'm interested for, I can choose mouse and tokenizer, for example, and so on. Is this right?
Yes. Yeah. The idea is that you start with you select the first tool. For example, if you have a text in some format, you check which tools are available for plain text. Then it.
You know, I used Weblicht.
Ah, okay.
But the phonetical analysis was not, as the lowest analysis was a tokenizer, that's all.
Yeah. In most cases, because there's a formal problem with integrating signal data into this chaining format. That's what we're working on at the moment. At the moment, you cannot get the audio data through the processing pipeline.
Also graphical problem, for example.
Yes. Yes. People also, for example, with old editions and so on, it would be interesting to have the scan of the original document going along with the linguistic analysis through the whole processing chain. At the moment, this is not possible. Yeah.
The most focus is now, I think, the raw text,
Definitely, yes. It's much more, the focus is much more on written text. Okay. I'm trying to reload this page. It doesn't look very nice. Ah, there it comes. I showed you a different screenshot in my presentation. The reason is, as common with the web service, the provider has changed the version. So they now have a new version without telling me. I have to get used to this version. So this is one of the downsides. What looked like this yesterday might look differently today. Okay, it has changed. I know the service is there, so I will go to speech recorder. Since I do not speak Georgian, I will change the project. This is a software for doing scripted speech recording. So it will present one item after the other and put each item into a file of its own. So I will take an example from a workshop. I have entered my, at least parts of my speaker data. And the software shows me, at the, in this case, it's configured so that it will show me and the expert's view of the audio recordings. As you can see, most of the items have been checked, so I have recorded them, but if not all of them have been recorded, I go to the next one. Basically, you can contribute to this software if you write, I have all the interface texts in German or English, and if you're interested in a Georgian version, I will give you this list of interface texts, and if you give it to me in Georgian, we will put it into the software, and the software will show everything in Georgian. So that would be a first and easy collaboration to do. Okay, it went to the first one without a check mark here. German. Okay, the recording seems to be okay. I'll go to the next one. Now it's changed to a more simpler view. We have this more complicated view at the beginning of a recording to see that the equipment is okay, that everything works. But I don't want the speakers to see the list of all the things they have to do. Sometimes they get afraid that they think, well, this will take an hour or so. So we just show them the simple view. If you've ever been to Germany, and particularly to the eastern part of Germany, that's the little Ampelmännchen, the little man in the traffic light. It's quite popular, and people like it very much, so we were allowed to use it in our software. I'll wear the jumper. The dude never takes a bus. Can we see that heart? At yesterday's race, he could hardly breathe, and his voice became hoarse. LEIPZIG 57569. Didn't that hurt? YQONEAMAUMLAUTKJ 7962. She took the butter, paused, and put it on the shelf. Can you see that hut? Neither her dress nor her face were happy. She took the butter, laughed, and put it on the shelf. Okay, we're through with the recordings. It has produced a number of recordings in my folder. And as you can see, there is a WAV file for every recording I just made. Now I can select, I can go to the WebMouse service, WebMouse Basic, and I select an audio file. So let's take one of the sentences. They're a bit more interesting. So S5 is a sentence. It has now arrived at the server. Oh, I can only hear it here. You have to believe me. This was sentence S5. Can we see that heart? Is the sentence I wrote or I spoke? I select the language. So Georgian is missing, but that's what Zacharia and I are working on, or Florian are working on. I click on Run Mouse. And it has produced a text grid file, which I can save. Okay. So this is the one I just produced with today's date and the time and some key so that I don't mix them up. I go to Prat and I select the sentence. I think I have to take a new one. This was S5. Yes, it's not here. Now I have to open the matching text grid, which was in the downloads folder. So this was okay. And if I look at the two together, okay, now we have to see whether you can hear anything. It displays everything here. Okay. So in this case, it worked rather well. This is a process that would have taken 100 times real time if you had done it manually. It worked well because the audio quality is good and because the system because the system knew the language. What I did before was an experiment, and I tried how good does it work for a language it doesn't know. The funny thing about these web services is that they are so easy to use that people start to play with them. In the old days, when you had to type in this long command, people never played with the system. They hated using it. Now it's a web interface where you simply take the files, upload them, and see what happens. So we could segment the same sentence with a different language and see what happens. Or the other way around. We could take a language the system doesn't know and try, does the German segmentation work? Does the English segmentation work? Does the French segmentation work? It doesn't cost you more than a few seconds, and the result is in some cases astonishing. So what we did before was record some Georgian.
Natia is an historical person first trying Georgian mounts.
Yes, you're right. We should take a picture of you and give you a medal. The first mouse voice. Okay. So these are the files that we get. Ah, this one. This was the way to work. Okay. Okay, there's not much in the R. So, of course, it cannot be perfect because the system doesn't know Georgian, but I simply transcribed the Georgian text with a German phoneme model. And for a first analysis of the text, this is okay. Now all we have to do is rearrange the boundaries and exchange one or the other signal. And hopefully, with the 1 hour of phonetically transcribed Georgian material, that's what you're working for, now you know what you're working for, this will be possible so that you get much better results comparable to German or English with the automatic segmentation. So that's what you are working for, and that's what we hope to get from you to put into the system. Okay, what can you do with this stuff now that you have segmented it? You do the final manual corrections. Okay, perfectly in time. What we normally then do is take the data. So let's have a look at one of the text grids. And there's something, if you save your data in Prat, it produces, we do two things first, sorry. Now you don't want to do this one file after the other. That's what I still wanted to show. If you have a lot of files and Speech Recorder puts them all into one directory, you should be able to do more of them, of course you can. We have WebMouse multiple, meaning that you can send an entire directory of files to the WebMouse service and it will go through them. It will check, is there for every WAV file a text file? And if yes, it will produce, and if there's a language it understands, then it will create a segmentation. So that's what I want to do now. And then while it is working, explain what we do with the final results. So this is, you don't see. Well, you have to believe me that around the please drag and drop, there's a gray area which doesn't show on the on the beamer here. It shows on my computer, but only very lightly. I will now switch again to the Georgian recordings. Okay, I will select all of them. Now I have to move this a bit to the side and drop them onto WebMouse. Now the files are being uploaded to Munich. Remember, these are the Georgian files. I think there are about 45 of them, numbers, dates, and so on. Okay, it takes a while. I go back to Prat. Within Prat, you have a very interesting option. Once you have created a text grid, text grid is a very ugly text format. Don't use it. Stop using it immediately, because there's something better available, even within Prat. You can take the text grid and then go to down to table. If you do this, you get a nice table representation of the data. So it will show everything in this way. And this is what you can use in Excel right away, or in R. And then you can start your analysis. So now what you see here is the names of the annotation tiers that we have used: ORS for the orthography, CAN for what was in the lexicon for every word, and MAU is what the mouse segmentation system produced. You can see the individual phonemes identified by mouse. You can see the words as they were in the signal. And this is something you can use in Excel like this. And then you can start, for example, in Excel, part of your analysis, or even better, use SPSS or R, or put it into some database. And that's where it becomes interesting. That's where you can really start with the data. You have the connection to the signal, you have the exact timing information, and everything in one place. So let's see how far. No, it's still uploading the data. Oh, it's even crashed. Okay, so I'll stop my demo here. For some reason, not all the data were transferred. I will finish my talk. Okay, what are my conclusions? First of all, the online processing of speech is feasible. It's not yet perfect, but you can do a lot of work and it makes your life easier. Crowdsourcing is a good way if you do not have the resources automatically available at the moment. But if you know people that can help, that can contribute. If I sit in Germany and I need Georgian experts, I can now ask them via the web to do the work, to help me, and then I can send them some compensation for their work, or we can exchange data. Web services is really the thing where we want to go, because this is going to make our work much different in the future. It's going to change the way we will work, because we can now chain different tools together. We can get a lot of work done automatically. We always have to check it manually, but that's the way we can go. So these, in the slides, I will just go through the list of the tools that I've been using: Prat for the phonetic analysis, R for the statistics, Speech Recorder for doing the scripted recordings, and there is a version for the iPad since last week, so that might change a lot of recording as well. Wiki Speech we do if you want to do web-based recordings. So if you want to go this way, give us a ring, send us an email, and we can arrange recordings in your language via the web, and it might be very interesting to test this. WebMouse, you've just seen it. And then if you want to do some perception experiments on the data that you have recorded, very often you want to ask people in the community, is this acceptable or not, and so on, there's another tool available. So I hope I got your ideas flying. Yes, please.
Do you mind, can we
Yes, within Speech Recorder, you can do it simply by having an empty text field. I should stay here. So in Speech Recorder, now I put the text that people should read. But if I leave this field empty and say, now the channel is open for 1 hour, it will record for 1 hour without any problem. And it will put this 1 hour into a signal. It does not have any automatic processing. You have to know beforehand, okay, this will take a few minutes. For example, this is part one of the interview. Then you can give the file name an identifier saying perhaps part one, and it's up to 5 minutes or up to 10 minutes, and you can simply do the recordings. But Speech Recorder was mainly intended for scripted recordings where you know the material. Doing unscripted material, you simply have to leave the text field empty and open the microphone channel for a long time, and then this part will be put into one file. So it is feasible, but it's less comfortable. Yes. No, unfortunately not. This is very complicated signal processing, and it's an open question in the area of signal processing. What you can do is, for example, with Speech Recorder, you can connect several microphones. So if you give everybody a microphone like this, and if they don't sit immediately next to each other, you get quite a good channel separation. Or if you give them a microphone like the one you just had before, then it becomes feasible. But the better or the more cleanly the audio is separated, the better the results will be. But you cannot separate it automatically. No, it's not yet possible.
The question as to dialects, you were asking whether you might have dialectal features.
Yes.
Be distinguished or something.
I just showed you the Speech Recorder with the author, in this case, with Georgian letters. But, of course, in dialectal recordings, you very often want to present people with a picture because you don't want to give them the word. They should produce the word that they are using in their dialect. That can be done. You can put pictures there as well and then ask them, how do you say this? What's the name for this in your dialect? That's easy. That can be done in Speech Recorder. You can even have the system speak to the speaker and then record the response. So you could also have a small dialectal sentence and see, for example, some common phrase, good morning, in the local dialect, and then people answer back. But a true dialogue is not possible, no.
If you stop the record,
yes.
Yes,
you could see it in WebMouse. There was yet another button under the download. We now have Prat web-based.
Okay.
So that's the idea.
It's completely different too.
Yes, it's completely different, but you can do the phonetic annotation in your browser. You can even do it on your mobile phone. So while in Tbilisi on the subway it might be too loud, but if you're in some quiet place in the garden, we could get you to work for us. Simply by telling you, look, this you can do now do via the phone. So that's what we're working on at the moment.
We can make this topic of class maybe here the next days.
Mm-hmm.
We will try it.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. You're welcome. Yes, please. In English, we're in the fortunate situation that there is a lot of material available. So we simply took all that we could and we had a lot of recordings ourselves. The minimum requirements that we have is about 1 hour of phonetically closely aligned or closely annotated speech. Then we can train the system to this language if the audio signal is of good quality. So if we have a clean signal plus 1 hour of phonetic segmentations, then that's enough to train the system for very good results. And of course, the more we get, the better it would be. At the moment, for example, we do not have a feedback mechanism. It would be nice if people would tell us, yes, the segmentation we receive from mouse is good, and then this could be used to retrain the system, but we have not built this into the system because it's probably people are not going to use it. If it's good, they don't tell us, and if it's bad, they complain, but no, they don't complain because they get it for free, then they say, okay, that's what I have to live with. So at the moment, we do not have this interaction, but it would be helpful. And it would be a bit, it would require that you resend us your correction so that we know where the error occurs, and most people don't do this. Yes.
An application which can fix geographically, which can do geographical fixing of speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of possible scenario for results of this development. And I would ask you to tell us in few sentences
yes.
about this, because it can be usable also here in Jordan.
Thank you for mentioning it.
It's
thank you for mentioning it. It's a very, very nice app. It's something that runs on only on the iPhone, not yet on Android, but the idea is to record, first of all, to estimate your dialect where you're coming from. So in this case, it presents you 16 words and asks, how is this word spoken in your region? And then you get a number of options from which you can select, and after 16 questions, it tells you, you are from this place. And then you can say, yes, that's right or not, and that's very nicely done. But it also can record your voice. So if you not agree with the judgment, then the system will ask you, well, how would you say it? And then you can speak it, and it will ask for your location, where you come from, and it knows the Swiss map, and then it puts a little pin on the place in the map. So it's called Dialect App, and it has been one of the most popular applications in apps in Switzerland. But until now, it's only developed for Swiss German.
Okay.
But the developer is Adrian Lehmann and Marie-Josée Colli from Zurich. And they are now, well, they will be going to other places, to Cambridge and London. So this will probably not be continued, but their idea will be taken up by other people. Yeah. It's beautiful, and people love it, yeah. Because the dialect always goes to the heart, and that's why people get emotionally involved in like this. Yeah.
Do you remember the 16 words or some of them?
Oh, yeah, they have the inside of an apple. When you've eaten the apple, what remains? There are about 40 words for this,
yes,
in Swiss German.
So it's not only phonetically, but it's...
It's also lexically, words. Yes. So they have our little goodies, the sweets that you eat, they have different names, and how do you say to go to bed? All this has different lexical items in the dialects. Yeah, there's no signal analysis here, it's only word-based, and their project they're working on now is doing some signal analysis as well. No.
Any further questions or remarks? Not so, then I can say thank you very much again.
You're welcome.
And it's time for a lunch break.